RadioInfluence.com. The future is now.
This is Landry Football on Radio Influence, the only podcast where you can get perspective of what happened on the gridiron through the eyes of a coach, scout, and front office administrator. Now, it's time to step into the film room. Here's Chris Landry.
It is Tuesday, February 12th, and this is another edition of the Landry Football Podcast. Well, how was your weekend with, I won't say no football, because for those of you that watch the Alliance League, and we'll talk a little bit about some of the players that showed up well in week one and kind of give some thoughts on that. But traditional football season being over, hope your weekend went well. It is fast and furious in the world of football in terms of news, and it's going to pick up even more. So we're going to get into a lot of stuff. The Kareem Hunt signing, Kyler Murray. We're going to talk a little bit about the transfer portal and the effect it's having in college football recruiting. And some talk a little bit about the Alliance and, you know, obviously coaching news going on and so on and so forth. So we've got a lot to get to today. Remind you what we got up on LandryFootball.com. We've decided to go with a scouting season sale for you, 50% off on a year's membership, because we looked at it and said, look, this is a big time of year in football. We're wrapping up and we're putting a lot of the touches on recruiting. We're really proud of what we've done there. Obviously, we've got the breakdowns by conference, but we're breaking down the schools individually and how each player graded out, with scouting notes on many of those players. So we've got that for you, for our college fans. We're going to keep you up to date on spring practice as it unfolds. We're going to keep you up to date in our notebooks on all the transfer information that's going on, which has created, quite frankly, a unique and aggressive news cycle in college football with all the transfer news. We've got NFL free agency right around the corner. The timeline now, as teams are continuing to, particularly the teams that made it deep into the playoffs and into the Super Bowl, certainly, are wrapping up the evaluation of their teams. And then, obviously, the personnel side has been working diligently on the pro personnel side, evaluating players all season long in the league. As we head to the combine in a couple of weeks, right after that, it's the start of the league year, which will have some decisions on who teams will keep, who teams will not elect to re-sign. We will have some news before then on players that are released. We've got those in our notebooks every day, NFL notebooks, as to what's going on, or re-signs of players. You can re-sign your players right now, obviously, and you've got time for that. So a lot of news going on in terms of NFL personnel news, and of course, the draft process. So it is so much information. We wanted to have a scouting season sale for you. So we've got that up, a lot of stuff there for you to take advantage of. It's, you know, the draft and recruiting and the remaining coaching moves, which are still going on, all the roster analysis on the college and NFL scene. So be sure you check that out. Also, don't miss out on our free War Room newsletter. Every week on Friday, you can sign up by going to LandryFootball.com. Go down on the right side, scroll about halfway down, hit War Room, provide me your email, and then we'll put you on the list. You'll have some interesting nuggets that are a little unique from things that don't think that's publishable, but we want to provide some inside information for you. So we want to do that. We're looking into to run some contests and have some things for you as well, free membership packages, what have you. So we will let you know about that if you are on the email list. So make sure you check out this podcast every Tuesday and Thursday. And on Wednesdays, check out the Rush the Field podcast. Tonight, we're going to tape late tonight for Wednesday release, the latest edition of the Rush the Field podcast, which is a college football podcast. We'll talk about the latest goings on in the college football world. We specialize once a week in state of the program, break down a college program. And what we've done is taken the top 15 or so teams that finished in the rankings last year. And we've done, gosh, who we've done? We've done Syracuse. We've done Michigan. We've done Kentucky. We've done Washington. I don't know if I'm forgetting out anybody. Tonight, we've got Central Florida. So it ought to be an interesting listen there. All right, let's get into it. I want to start with the Kareem Hunt signing of the Browns. You know, always explain that when decisions are made, you always look at the two P's, problem versus production. Obviously, if a player has no problem, no issues, a great player, there's no issue. There's no reluctance in going down that path. But when there is, one of the things that you look at is the risk worth it? For example, let's take Kareem Hunt. Well, I'll give you an example that is come out. I was getting ready to say, if Kareem Hunt was coming out in this year's draft with his same problems, what would his plight be? Well, we already know that. It's Joe Mixon a couple of years ago. Joe Mixon is a top 15 player in the draft a couple of years ago, but due to the same problem that Kareem Hunt had, caught on video assaulting a woman, which is obviously something that is reprehensible, and no one thinks that's okay or justified in any way. The issue is, does it warrant another opportunity? And what's the risk with doing it? Well, in terms of a draft pick, there's plenty of risk. Because if you take a guy and he doesn't work out, you've wasted a pick that could have gone somewhere else to an elite player in the league. Potentially, you could have drafted. So it affects the draft status. It's not the case with Kareem Hunt. Yeah, a little bit of a history in his background, but nothing that came to light like the most recent situation this year, where it was very clear that Kansas City could not keep him on the roster. And keep in mind that the thing that got Kareem Hunt exiled out of Kansas City was the lie, the cover-up, because he not only committed the act, but he lied about it. You know, he told Kansas City that it didn't happen, and then the video came out, and then Kansas City had no choice at that point. That became a bigger issue because now Kansas City really looked bad, so they had to let him go. And we know that Hill on their roster has done a great job, and Andy Reid has done a good job with some of these guys that have been risk character guys. And he took a chance on Michael Vick, convinced Jeffrey Lurie in Philadelphia to do so. But this was a case where Kareem lied to him. So they didn't trust him. They moved on from him. So he's out on the street. The same problems are there. But you've got John Dorsey, who drafted him along with Andy Reid in Kansas City, knows him very well, knows the issues in his background. And they said all the right things in their press release and their press conference yesterday, that we believe in him. We believe that he's learned. We certainly do not condone what he did, but we certainly believe that he is someone that is going to not only show remorse, but is going to earn his way back into the good graces of the fan bases and all of that. That's all true. That's all real. And, you know, but let's make sure that it gets to the point of problem versus production. The guy's a great player. Ray Rice had the same situation happen to him, correct? No one signed Ray Rice. You know why? Ray Rice was a declining player who would have, without this issue, gotten another job in the league as a role player, as a backup, but there are plenty of other Ray Rices out there at the time that Ray Rice was at that point in his career. Plenty of guys that could fill that spot. Very fungible position. So why do you deal with the headache? Why would you deal with the PR hit and sign Ray Rice? Well, you wouldn't. But Kareem Hunt is an elite running back. I mean, one of the, in a league that has some great backs, Gurley, when healthy, certainly not the end of this year, but certainly talented. Kamara, a lot of good backs in the leagues. You know who the top backs are. Kareem Hunt's one of them. So the production, the ability is definitely worth it. What is the risk? Well, you're not using a draft pick. You're not trading for him, obviously. He's out on the street. You've got all the leverage as a team. He doesn't have any leverage. They signed him to a one-year deal. There's no upfront money. There's no guarantee. He may be suspended for the entire year. Oh, by the way, Cleveland doesn't need him this year. They've got Chubb. They've got Johnson. They don't need him to come in and be the guy. They're signing him with the idea that if it works out, they've got an elite player, and they'll move on likely from Duke Johnson down the road. But for all they know, Kareem Hunt may be suspended for the entire year by the league. You don't know that. We don't know what the league's going to do yet. But they've got his rights. And at the end of this year, he's still a restricted free agent. Browns can tender him, keep him, or let him go. There's no risk. There's no downside to it. The only downside, the only negativity is the PR hit. There are going to be people that are going to criticize it. And I don't blame them for criticizing it. If you're going to look at it from a, you can't have it both ways. I think sometimes you have to say all the right things like the Browns did and also say, look, the guy's a great football player. And at the end of the day, we want guys that can help us win football games. But we want guys that what we think have the type of character that can get it done. But we also know that we're not dealing with angels here, and we're not dealing with guys that have always done the right things. Now, what he did was abhorrent, but we're going to try to work him through that. And we're not going to try to reclimate him out of the goodness of our own heart. We're trying to reclimate him so that he can become a productive player for us and help us win. And also, perhaps, we're going to hold his feet to the fire that he can become somebody that can be an advocate to maybe help improve a greater understanding of domestic abuse. But make no mistake, the risk versus the reward is well worth it. I mean, the reward is potentially great and you can control it. The risk is minimal. Oh, there's going to be maybe difficulty in selling your female fan base and maybe some others that this was a good move. I get it. But at the end of the day, in today's news cycle, this is a story. It's a story now. It's a slow off-season news-wise, but there'll be something else. People start talking about something else. There'll be some other news, and then they'll forget about it. It's a fan base that is passionate about their team, and I think the cries of, oh, this is an awful signing, is going to be drowned out in that fan base anyway by the desire to win. They know their fan base. They did their homework. If it doesn't work, it's not like they've hurt their team. Kareem Hunt will not hurt the locker room. There is nobody that's not going to welcome him. Not that people are going to condone what he did, but he's not someone that is a bad locker room guy. He's a great locker room guy. So as long as he fixes to correct himself, and as long as they give him the support, and as long as he doesn't do anything like that again, and kind of shows remorse and improves himself, becomes a great player, this is a great move. In many ways, this is a much easier move from a football standpoint than somebody like Antonio Brown, who is not someone who's done anything criminally, but is perceived to be an attitude problem, a malcontent in the locker room, despite the fact that he works hard. You know, those guys are more distracting in the locker room than a guy like Kareem Hunt would ever be. Risk versus reward, problem versus production. Listen, it's a different situation, but people ask me all the time, not so much anymore, but Colin Kaepernick, can you believe he doesn't have a job? Yeah, I can believe it. First of all, Colin Kaepernick is not as good a quarterback in the eyes of football people as people think. If he was Aaron Rodgers, if he was Patrick Mahomes, and he did what he did, you think people wouldn't sign him? That's ridiculous. The teams that have him would make some kind of public statement and they would handle it PR-wise. They're not going to give up on an elite talent. Football people don't think Colin Kaepernick's an elite talent. The people that I work with in my evaluation of Colin, I think he's got some value as a football player, not great value. And football people in the league, I've not had one of them really show much interest in him. Now, is there some owner backlash in, I don't want to deal with, people talk about collusion. I don't think it's collusion. I think it's individual issues revolving Colin Kaepernick that says, I don't want to fool with that guy. It's the negative publicity. I'll tell you a story. The Baltimore Ravens, with John Harbaugh, brother of Jim Harbaugh, that coached Colin Kaepernick in San Francisco, and obviously John and the Ravens were on the winning side in the Super Bowl against his brother and against Kaepernick. They wanted to sign him. This was over a year ago, before they drafted Lamar Jackson. They wanted to sign him. And Steve Bisciotti, the very aggressive and open-minded owner, said, go for it. Steve Bisciotti got immediate negative feedback from his fan base, not just the average fan that buys tickets, but the suite holders. You know, a lot of, you know, that created a lot of negativity. And Steve Bisciotti said, hold on, no, we're going to pass on this. Can't do it. No doubt in my mind, he would have signed. And there's no doubt in my mind that that has probably been consistent around other owners in the league, that they didn't want the negativity of them, of dealing with it, because Colin Kaepernick's not a great player. If remove Colin Kaepernick and say Patrick Mahomes did the same thing, Patrick Mahomes is being signed, folks. People are scrambling to sign him, and they're going to sit there and say, you know, hey, the whole kneeling stuff, we'll work around that stuff. Okay, we'll deal with the negativity because the wins are... Kaepernick's not the same guy. Kaepernick falls into the category of a Ray Rice. Not what they did. Colin kneeling down and Ray Rice hitting a woman, that's not what I'm talking about. Two different. But they're the same in that the problem is greater than the production. The problem of having to deal with a Colin Kaepernick in your locker room and dealing with the PR nightmare is a lot worse than the production is good. Could Colin Kaepernick be a good number two quarterback for most teams in the league? Could he even be a starter potentially for a few? Yes. Would he be a guy that you could win with consistently? No. I know he won in San Francisco. And if you were to play well enough around him, you can win with him. But that can be said about a number of other guys as well, some of which don't have the problem that he has off the field or the distraction off the field. People say, oh, but Colin Kaepernick went to the Super Bowl. Hey, Joe Flacco won that Super Bowl, and Joe Flacco is going to be out of work with Baltimore. Now, he'll find a job because he's a little better passer than Kaepernick was, and he doesn't have the off-the-field distraction. So when somebody signs Joe Flacco this offseason, it's not because he's white. It's not because he's any racial issues. It's because he doesn't have that negativity. Colin Kaepernick doesn't have the ability to overcome the negativity that comes along with it. It is not unlike Tim Tebow. Tim Tebow, who did nothing wrong, he's just not a very good quarterback, but people kept giving him a chance because they thought he could really, whatever they thought he could bring him, great leader, whatnot. But there was distractions, nothing to do with him, but you signed Tim Tebow as your backup quarterback in New York, and there's a press conference to announce the backup quarterback. There's a private jet bringing in the backup quarterback. The locker room's saying, what the hell is this? And, you know, the star pass rusher and can't get a new deal, and you got a backup. No. That becomes a distraction that negatively affects the locker room. Tim Tebow was, quote-unquote, too big of a star and not productive enough of a player to warrant fooling with. So I hope that gives you an idea that, yeah, there's issues. Yeah, Kaepernick is not in the league in large part because of his off-the-field stuff. But it has as much to do with the on-the-field stuff as well. A great player is not dealing with that. He's not a great player. So I think there's very little risk in the Kareem Hunt signing. The PR can be mitigated with production. And if he's not productive, you move on from him. Simple as that. Kyler Murray came out, told the world that he's going to be a football player. That's what his focus is on. Made quite a bit of statement in that he's returning $1.2 million of the $1.5 million signing bonus the A's gave him. That's putting money where your mouth is. And then he forfeits the remaining $3.16 million that's due on March 1st. He's going to go on the restricted list with the A's, and they will retain his baseball rights. It's interesting to note, it's a first-round pick for the A's. If he ends up being a first-round pick in the NFL, which, by the way, could happen, he'll be the first player ever to be a first-round pick in Major League Baseball and the NFL. I know you think there's been a lot of guys who've played both and been high picks in both, not any that have been first-round picks in both. Murray will join Deshaun Watson as the only FBS quarterback to pass for 4,000 yards and rush for another 1,000 in the same season. He surpassed Baker Mayfield's passing efficiency. Listen, guy's very athletic. He's as good a dual-threat quarterback I have seen in a long, long time. I think he can play in the league. I think you have to embrace what he is. You're going to have to embrace the out-of-pocket skill sets that he brings. I think in the pocket, you've got to work him a little differently. You're not going to work him. He's not going to be real effective on the straight three-step drop. You're going to have to be a little bit of sprint boot action. You're going to have to do a lot of things with him. He's going to have to, you know, be a deep set guy and work his way back. He can find the throwing lanes with his feet. But the height's a factor. This whole thing, well, the height doesn't matter. It's not a big deal. Folks, it's a big deal, or we wouldn't talk about it being a big deal as scouts. There's a reason why you don't have guys like that play in the league consistently. Now, does it mean that it eliminates them? Absolutely not. You can still play in the league at that height. You just have to have the skill set to overcome it. And he's got the skill set and the athletic qualities to overcome it. But I do think he's not for everyone. He's going to have to make, to me, the biggest issue, he's going to have to make that full-time mental and emotional commitment to playing quarterback. I like his instinctive qualities, his poise, his leadership. I think he's got arm talent to throw it off of different platforms and different arm angles. I think he's got some touch. He's going to have to learn how to anticipate and throw before the receiver break point. But I think those things can be learned. But the height is an issue. And the biggest thing I would have concern is, you know, people think, oh, he's 100% committed to football. I haven't heard that. What I am, again, pretty big sign that he's leaving some money on the table, Oakland A's money. But I think he also has been told that if he wants to sign with the A's, if he wants to play baseball, the A's will bring that money back in. He'll sign a contract that he'll get that money back. So the issue is he's playing both sides against one another. He wants to see where his value is in the NFL. If he's a first-round pick in the NFL and the A's offer him a minor league contract, I think he's going to play in the NFL. He's going to give that a shot. My problem is I'm not going to draft a guy so that he can give it a shot. So what does he do if he's not really successful in a year or two in the NFL? Go back to baseball, sign a nice contract, and then I've given up a first-round pick to draft him as the future quarterback of my organization, and he's going to be playing baseball for the A's. I'm not doing that. I don't see that as him worth that risk. And he can say whatever he wants, but, you know, his actions are going to have to show it. If he doesn't get drafted, let's say the A's up their offer, and he doesn't get drafted to the third round of the NFL. Well, then he goes plays baseball. That's what he's going to do. Well, again, though, if you're an NFL team, the evaluation part of Kyler Murray is pretty easy from a football standpoint. It's just, what are you getting? Are you getting a guy that's going to play baseball or play football? And if he's going to play the baseball versus football against one another, well, then I'm not going to be that committed to a guy that I'm not sure is going to be committed to playing football. More to that story, and once I get to the combine and sit down with him, as I'm sure I know some teams that I work for are going to want to visit with him. So I'm going to be interested to see what he says. But again, what you say is one thing, what you do is another. To this point, all he's done is committed to quote-unquote playing football. For now, he's committed to going to the combine. He's committed to not showing up for the A's spring training. But beyond that, I don't know. Stay tuned. The transfer portal in college football, wanted to address the effect that it's starting to have in college football. There's guys can take their name, put their name in, take their name out. There's now upwards of 1,400 or more players in the portal. It's done a couple of things. It's obviously given players an out. I said it when it happened. You know, on the surface, people think it's great. Well, players can leave. Freedom to do that. Coaches can leave. I never quite got that. Coaches are professionals. This is a learning process for the players. I think unless you have a legitimate reason to leave, family-wise, family situation, I don't really like all the transfers. Because what we're teaching right now, and I see this, yes, I am old school. I get it. So save that. What I see is a preponderance of players that, well, if they don't win the job, I'm not going to stay and fight and try to win it. I'm going to quit and go somewhere else. Well, we're teaching a way out where there's really not a way out. The way out is through hard work and to do things the right way. And if you do that, that's your best chance of being successful. But moving around and moving around, moving around often is not going to help. You're going to a new system. Maybe it's a better opportunity. Maybe it's not. I think it's created chaos in a lot of respects. But here's what it's also done. It's also given college programs license to push players out. So they sign certain guys. So let's just say over a three-year period, you sign six or eight guys that are just not as good as you thought they were. They just haven't panned out like you thought they would. You basically tell them without telling them, you know, your future here is not all that good. It may be another option might be the best way you ought to go. I think that's what we're seeing. And so some of the players leaving, they're being kind of pushed off the nest, so to speak. So what that has done is created another pool of players, another avenue by which college programs can improve their squad. So college programs are having to go back to their notes, their recruiting notes on the player when he came out of high school. And then they're doing a lot of study, and this is where the large staffs come into play here. You're doing a lot of study on other college programs, how well a player played. It's college free agency. It's just like NFL free agency, scouting other NFL players for your team. It's scouting college players in college free agency, and maybe you could find a player. You could find a linebacker here. Maybe you find a quarterback there, you know, running back, a corner. You know, Arizona State started spring practice. They've been through a week. One of their corners is a backup at Baylor that left, and you're seeing a lot of that. So from a, I don't know, excitement, a news cycle standpoint for fans, they like it. For college programs, look, it's not all that bad from their standpoint because, again, they can decide to move on from a player without feeling like the kid is left out. The kid has an opportunity to move on somewhere else, and you have an opportunity to use that scholarship how you see fit. Maybe it's somebody that you get to transfer in, but maybe it's an extra player that you may recruit in your next class. May gray shirt. You may, you know, there are a lot of ways you can maneuver it on your roster. That's why we see some schools sign 28 players. Some of those numbers go in into the next year. So there are ways you can do that, and it's become a very interesting and a very complicated personnel strategy in college football, but it's one that is definitely affecting how you're doing. I've got a story up about Nebraska and what Scott Frost is doing. I'm noticing as signing day finished up last week, some programs held back a couple of scholarships because they felt like some guys that they might be able to get through the transfer portal were better fits than the last two or three guys who were willing to offer scholarships to. So in essence, what you're doing now is you're having to compare where you want your scholarship allocation. Just like there's a salary cap allocation in the NFL, there's a scholarship allocation in college football, and you may decide, I'd rather save that scholarship, try to make a run at these handful of guys in the transfer portal, and if I can't get those guys, then I use the scholarships next year where I think there's more quality. Because remember, schools now are recruiting 2-3 years at a time. So they already know what the 2020 class is looking like, the pool of prospects as compared to last class. And they're starting to get a feel for 21. So it's become a real phenomenon and interesting process from a recruiting standpoint. Some NFL news, Panthers signed Eric Reed, who had a really good year. There's another guy that was kind of followed the Colin Kaepernick mode of kneeling. No problem him getting a new year deal. 3-year, $22 million deal. It will end up being about $8 million guaranteed that can be earned if he's on the roster, $10 million. Really good year last year. No problem him finding work. Bob Sutton was signed by the Falcons. People have asked me, what do you think of the move and why? Bob Sutton is going to be a defensive consultant. He's the defense coordinator of the Chiefs. Understand, every situation has a reason behind it. In Atlanta, Dan Quinn, the head coach, is going to call the defensive plays next year. If you're going to call the defensive plays, you need some help in some game management issues that sometimes can have some loose ends when you're the play caller on the offensive or defensive side. Bob Sutton's role is going to be as a defensive advisor, yes, but he's going to be game day eyes, likely up in the booth, that's going to help him with game management situations. That's going to help him help Dan Quinn be able to handle his play calling duties and have somebody that can help him with some of the game day management issues. So that's the reason for that, and it makes sense. Now, whether it's a good fit or there's symmetry there, we'll see. But it makes a lot of sense what they're trying to do. Florida could be losing Todd Grantham. We'll see. He is a strong candidate for the Bengals job. We'll see how that plays out. But he is a strong candidate. We're going to keep you up to date on what's going on at Kentucky as well. Florida could be losing Todd Grantham as his defensive coordinator. He is a strong candidate in Cincinnati with the Bengals. We'll keep you up to date on that. Also, it looks like Kentucky defense coordinator Matt House will end up going to Kansas City to join the Chiefs. There's a linebacker coach. Kentucky was not going to let him out of the deal. Stayed. Now it looks like he is indeed going to go to Kansas City. We'll keep you up to date on that as well. And finally, I want to talk a little bit about the Alliance League. And if you want some detail of who stepped up, who did a really good job in the first week, I've got a scouting report on some guys that really stood out, some good players, a number of different positions who didn't, but some guys that you need to keep an eye out on. A couple of things that I need to remind everybody about. And I know that the ratings, I don't know what the ratings were. I heard that the viewership was pretty good, and that's great. I hope the league survives. The reason is this. From a developmental standpoint, we don't have a league that develops players. And you've heard me talk ad nauseum about how we don't develop players well enough. This is an opportunity for players to develop, coaches to develop, scouts to develop, trainers to develop, equipment men to develop, front office people to develop. I think all these things are really important. We don't have enough training ground here. If you look at other sports, baseball, basketball, hockey, they all have developmental leagues. We don't have that. We have college football straight to the NFL, and that's still going to remain. I want people to understand kind of where this league is. 81% of the league is players that played in the NFL. These are guys. Go and look at the names. Demontre Moore, Christian Hackenberg, Gavin Escobar, Gerald Christian, Garrett Gilbert, John Wolford, Rashad Ross, Trent Richardson, Darrell Presley, Aaron Green, on and on and on. You're going to remember those guys. If you follow the NFL, Will Sutton, just on and on and on. Terrence Garvin, Sterling Moore, on and on and on. Nick Novak. These are guys you remember from playing in the NFL. These are guys that are capable of playing in the league because they've played in the league. Some of them are going to get their chances again, and some will make it. Some won't, only because there's a numbers game in football. But the ability to develop is so important, and I think this is where oftentimes we're going to find not only some good players come out of this league, but some guys are going to emerge as really good players, like potential star players in the league, because they have ability, but we don't have the ability to develop them, and they'll have this development opportunity. And with that, that opportunity is going to lead to a chance to be really good players at the NFL level. This is not competition for the NFL. It's a spring league that will allow you to wet your whistle along with the other sports that you watch, but it'll maybe cure your football fix to a degree. You can't play NFL football all year long. That's what makes the fall special, right? But you can have a little spring league that you can throw in with your draft and your free agent information and your recruiting information, and you can enjoy a little football and enjoy seeing what coaches and players are doing a good job and who might find their way into the league. I think it's really good. Enjoy it for what it is. If I hear this that, oh, it's not, it's nothing like the NFL. It's nothing like the NFL, and it shouldn't be like the NFL, and it's not going to be anything like the NFL, and that should not be the mode of operation. That's what caused the USFL to fold. That league was really good. It had good. Now, they went out and recruited. This was before the advent of big money spending in the NFL. And you had some big rich owners in the NFL. They were going to try to challenge the NFL. They lost, and they folded. This is not what this league is going to be. No one's going to catch the 800-pound gorilla of the NFL. This is has a chance to be to develop into a developmental league for the NFL. And if we can do that, I think it's going to really enhance the NFL product, because I think the development as we go forward with this, with our sport, is to say it's needed is a vast understatement. So good luck with that. I don't know how the XFL is going to play out next year when they start in 2020. I think they're a little bit more risque and a little bit more, hey, we'll try to catch your attention with some different ideas. But if you watch the Alliance League, and if you get a chance to watch it, you'll see they've got some different, you know, you hear me talk about having an eye in the sky as an official in the booth. That's what the Alliance League is doing. Good. Let the Alliance be the guinea pig. Try different rules out. Try different camera angles out. Try different technical issues out. Try different rules out. This will all eventually benefit the NFL because you can see how it works. I think it's good in a lot of regard. Now, people have asked me, is this going to change college football? And the answer is no. The path for high school players to the NFL is through college. They all understand that. Everyone understands that. The guys that are playing in this league are guys that went through college to develop their game, went to the NFL, didn't quite make it, and here they are. So if you're an elite player, your best chance is to go through college. If you're not an elite player, your best chance is to go through college and develop and become better so that you can at least maybe get into one of these leagues like the Alliance. Then you might have a chance to get into the NFL there. There might be the occasional player that's just, oh, well, five-star, every college wants him, and the kid just doesn't want to go to college. You know, at that point, would the Alliance League take him? I think if they want to truly be developmental, I don't think they're going to touch him. Because I think if you're going to be tied to the NFL one day, which the Alliance wants to, they're not going to upset the apple cart of college football. I do think a place like the XFL might. So, listen, I think there is an avenue for that college kid that maybe just doesn't want to go to school and wants to play football. They might have the avenue in the XFL, but I think that's going to be few and far between. Again, you want to learn more about players in the league, go to LandryFootball.com. Take out our membership package. You'll get all that information as well as everything else going on around the football. Appreciate you joining us today. Be sure to send any questions that you want addressed here. We'll address them here at LandryFootball.com. We appreciate you joining us. Check out the scouting season sale we've got at LandryFootball.com. And we'll talk to you on Thursday.
To get more of Chris's knowledge, visit and subscribe to LandryFootball.com. You can also find him on Twitter at LandryFootball. This has been Landry Football on Radio Influence. This is an In the Trenches with Ian Beckles. Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
There may be some cap casualties happen this offseason. That's very possible. The name that's everybody's talking about is Gerald McCoy, and who's making, you know, close to $13 million. I still have people calling and justifying him making $13 million, which I find funny. Even at $6.5 million, I'm not sure it's worth it. Okay, that's half. Injured a lot. I don't think he plays a run. He's good for six sacks a year. If that's $6.5 million, then I guess that's the going rate. It's certainly not $13 million. So regardless, there's going to be something happen with Gerald McCoy, whether they restructure. There's no reason for Gerald McCoy just say, hey, just restructure my contract. he would rather get out there in a free agent market and see if anybody else wants him. If one team wants you and they think you're the piece, you can make a lot of money if one team wants you. And that's a possibility. So Gerald's not just going to say, okay, just cut my salary in half. I don't think that's going to be the case, because everybody keeps on saying, well, let's keep him for $6 million. It's not that easy. You got to put him out there in the market first. So it's not that quite easy to just ink him like that.
In the Trenches with Ian Beckles can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.